Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. My name is Armand Farouk, and I'm here with my host, Mark Kosoglou. And today, we have Ross Shenkin, the VP of Sales over at Multiplier, and the first ever episode we've had on all things around pricing. Mark, why should people listen?
I don't know if people have heard of Multiplier. It's one of the fastest growing companies on the planet right now, and this is the guy that is orchestrating the engine. You know he's got stuff to drop, and I thought he dropped it, so let's go.
This was a freaking good one. If you ever have been confused about deal structure, folks, and so 3, 2, 1.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do, do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes. Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Woodpecker. When you're sending a sales email, you generally want to avoid putting punctuation in the subject line. If you've got an exclamation point, it makes it seem like you're shouting at them, look at this amazing offer, and a question mark just smells salesy, so avoid punctuation. Now, if you want to steal my full sales cadence from my friends at Woodpecker, there's a link in the show notes for you to go get it and try it for free. Otter AI's Autopilot for Sales gives you the freedom to sell on your discovery calls by taking notes for you. One of the best ways to deepen your discovery is to ask your prospect about the impetus behind their goals. So when a prospect tells me they want to advertise on more sales podcasts, I'll say, well, it's not every day that you wake up and decide you want to sponsor a podcast. What's causing you to even explore this in the first place? Now, we put together the ultimate discovery checklist with our friends at Otter AI, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes.
Gong's going to help you run the 5-minute drill at the end of all of your calls today. At the end of a call, pressure test the prospect with 3 questions. Number 1, do you want to buy? If the answer is no, why set a next step at all? Number 2, when do you want to buy? If it's tomorrow, we got to move fast. Number 3, how do you buy? Based on the first 2 answers, I can now adequately decide if and how I set a next step. And this was stolen from the Gong 30 MPC 90-minute masterclass, and you can steal it too in the show notes.
All right, Ross, welcome to the show. We start every show with your top 3 actionable takeaways. Let's get your 3.
Takeaway number 1, effective Monday team meeting. So all leaders typically have a weekly stand-up on Mondays. So every Monday you want to kickstart the week to ensure we're rowing in the same direction and focus on the right key initiative. So in order to do this, you got to have a structure in place where we connect, we celebrate, we learn, communicate, and prioritize. So first, when we connect, we're learning about people's weekends, any fun facts, things that were going on, getting people to communicate so it's not just the sales manager show, but more about them opening up to the rest of the team. Next, we want to celebrate. Let's celebrate the team, what they did last week. Did they win any big deals? Did anyone get married? Any big celebrations? Then we want to learn from each other. Typically, you're going to want to have one of your teammates be the one to present on their key learning. So everyone is learning about the action item together. Then this is your job to communicate any changes that are happening, any expectations for them. That's really important to communicate at the team level meeting and then prioritize what are your key focus areas, what are the things that you want them to remember for the next 4 or 5 business days.
Boom. What's number 2?
Number 2. Mark's favorite, speedy meetings. Meetings suck, but they can be better with speedy meetings. So this is where all meetings start at the 5-minute mark and they end at the 30-minute or at the end of the hour. So it reduces chances that people are typically being late when they're running back-to-back on Zoom calls, but they're going to thank you when they have 5 minutes to run to the restroom, grab a beverage, grab a quick bite to eat. So for you as a people leader, you also don't want to be the leader that's always late to their one-on-ones or their meetings and being a disrespectful manager. Set your meetings to speedy meetings and watch your world change.
Watch our world change. With no further ado.
He is in sales, Mondo. He's in sales.
I sell speedy meetings as well as EOR. So whatever you need, Mark.
One of the greatest takeaways of all time. All righty, Ross. Bring us home. What's number 3?
Number 3. Concession approval matrix and levers. So it's important to create a concession approval matrix and framework at each level of leadership, including the AE, to encourage stronger pricing integrity habits and uniformity across each segment that accounts for commitment, which is like the usage or users, the term, 1 year term, 2 year term, the product suite or number of SKUs if you're a multi-product solution, and even billing frequency. It becomes messy when your largest customers are paying more per unit than your smaller customers due to a poor pricing framework. So do this early and instill the right behavior.
All right, first question. So you have this really nice framework. I love a good framework. It helps you know what you need to roll in on Monday morning, having ready. People know what to expect. Is this explicit? Do you have a slide that says connect, a slide that says celebrate, or is it like a known flow that you use? How does a rep see what you're doing with this?
I think it's starting to become like organic with the rep of what to expect in a Monday team meeting. And that's important. They want to know what they're walking in on. We instilled really early in our like sales leadership that we have to make them enjoyable for us to show up, or else all reps are sitting back in their chairs, they're unengaged, they're thinking about all of their other deals. But as a first-time leader years ago, I actually had stress on Fridays and Monday mornings when I was creating my deck of like, what am I going to talk about this week? Is my team getting value out of it? Is like the biggest question I want to answer each meeting.
So how do you know it's fun? Because fun is the fuel for hard work. Hard work makes you feel like you're contributing, and every human wants to contribute to stuff, right? So fun is like this, one of these baseline things for me. Like, listen, connect, celebrate, learn, communicate. That sounds cool. It doesn't sound fun. Help me. How do you make it fun, man?
The first part is the fun part. So when we connect, sometimes we have like an open-ended question. Some of our favorites are, is a hot dog a taco? What's your favorite dessert? When you're in this like remote Zoom environment, you just don't have the shoulder connection you used to have with your sales team on the floor. And so there's only so many opportunities for you to actually get to know each other if you're not listening to each other's calls and clarity gong, et cetera. And so this at least opens the floor up a little bit. Sometimes based on the mood of the team, it's a little bit more forced. So you have to read the room. Not everyone wants to answer their favorite dessert, but more times than not, we're getting the team communicating a little bit amongst themselves.
And your favorite dessert is?
Chocolate chip cookie melted with vanilla ice cream.
Cool. I like having Mondo for dessert, but go ahead, Mondo. I see you're up.
I think a lot of times these Monday morning meetings, everyone's tired. It happens at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. People are multitasking. And frankly, the sales leader comes in because they have to. And all of the Monday morning meeting structures that I've seen, the good ones all have similar elements to them. But what I usually see outstanding leaders do is they realize that if I'm not going to get up on Monday, my team's not going to get up. And so we had this thing where my team would sort of roll their eyes at it. But in the last week of the quarter, every Monday morning meeting, Ross, you'll appreciate this because you're a Drake fan. I would like start every end of quarter week with that song on screen share and keep it up uncomfortably longer until the entire team was dancing. I would refuse to stop until someone would be on their feet being like, let's go, it's end the quarter. And it's like those little things out of the transfer of enthusiasm in sales. We're not doing some boring bean counting career. There's a leaderboard, there's a gong, there's all these things. And so Ross, you talked about the learn piece, where you're oftentimes having one of your reps teach something to the team. Could you talk about how do you actually structure that piece? Are you pre-deciding on a topic? Is it basically anyone can volunteer to teach someone something and they're going off the cuff? How do you structure the learn portion where someone else is taking the stage?
Yeah, for sure. I love that you're playing music when you're Monday morning meetings. Oftentimes we'll do the same. Some things that are fun is sometimes, like if we really need a pick-me-up, I'll dress up in like a costume. Sometimes I've worn a suit. Sometimes I've worn like a 70s outfit just to get us in the right mood for the day. You know, it's tough. The number of screenshots that have been taken of me in a Monday meeting are countless. So to your original question of how are we structuring that and setting it up for success to, for a key learning of the team. Typically in that last element we're prioritizing, we're going to have like a theme of the week. But as we know that we typically have these sales initiatives, whether it's MedPick's a new initiative, setting next steps is an initiative, whatever that initiative may be. Those are the things that we are looking for within the rep sales calls to highlight of like, hey, here's an example of us doing the thing that we talked about doing. And if in the event we can't find one, we'll then find like an objection. We'll find just a rep talking through a deal that they won that was against a competitor. you know, we had teams of multiple managers. I'd ask the managers the week prior if there was any good examples and volunteers that we feel like could be a good representation of the team. Or if it's myself, you know, I'm going through calls constantly. So seeing areas and then asking the rep if they're comfortable sharing that on the Monday team meeting. And they'd give them a allotted period of time, which is typically like 5 to 7 minutes.
I think the theme of this area is have a structure. But like what I'm taking away from it mostly is just this kind of like fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. Have your music going.
Completely agree. We started to do themes when it came to like our monthly kickoffs too, where we would have pairs of hosts and we would dress up and we'd make the deck all different themes. Emo theme was a big hit. I think Bachelor or the Bachelorette was a huge hit. So we were giving roses to each other. And you can just go based off like whatever is top of mind or culture specific.
Are you doing any sort of metrics review or any sort of review of numbers, commitments, et cetera, in your Monday morning meeting in the communicate and prioritize portions towards the end? Or are you keeping this metric light and more professional development and mindset focused?
I think this is probably a debate for many sales leaders. I definitely see the purpose of showing like the scoreboard and where we're at, et cetera. In my experience, and open to a debate here, I've seen it just fall flat. Most salespeople care about themselves and not about others. They obviously care about a dashboard and they typically have that as a bookmark on their inbox. But I see it just fall a little bit flat when I'm showing these metrics and here's what we need to do.
Well, I want to move into the concession approval matrix, Ross. I think this is a very interesting idea. So what I'd love is, first of all, is that something that you can share? Is there something that you can share with us that we could show people?
I'm sure I can mask one and make it empty and share like what it looks like based on headcount or users, free incentives, what levels of approval. I can definitely provide something. I just did this actually at Multiplier and I'm still learning everything about the business. Inherently, if we're able to make these things approved by Sagar, et cetera, it's going to inherently change the behavior of the reps on how they want to sell deals. And we're going to be giving some pretty good incentives for them to sell the way that we want them to sell.
And so the thought here is that I'm a rep and I'm about to go into a call where we're going to talk commercials. And I have my little piece of paper next to me. Is it a worksheet or is it literally like a laminated thing that I look at and like color by number?
I wish I did have an example for us to walk through prior. So essentially it's a large grid. And it's broken out by typically how we bill, which is on users. And so we have, you know, an X to Y, a Y to Z category. And so for you to get to like the next set of discounts, you would need to get to that next benchmark. And then there's going to be different levels where the AE is going to see what their floor is. And then they're going to see what their manager's floor is too. And so hopefully they're articulating only what they can approve. And then if there's a part of a conversation where, Mark, you say, hey, Ross, I need to get to this discount level. You can truthfully say, like, I need to actually loop in my manager here. Like, I need to talk with them. And the thing that we're really solving is that now the managers are being brought into these deals earlier than before, and they're getting to answer questions. So the rep is saying, hey, I need an X percent discount or else they won't move forward. And say, oh, why is that, right? The manager gets to be involved. They get to learn about the deal. And more times than not, they're probably going to approve if it meets their, you know, criteria. But it just gives the AEs a little bit of a framework to not just be offering the world without a commitment.
So when you lock somebody into like a framework, there's always going to be buyers that want to push the outside of that. How do you help your sellers understand that?
Yeah, more times than not, they do too. They want to push outside of it. And it's up to our account executive team to really uncover the reason behind the ask. And so if our pricing is ever more than, you know, we're getting pushback on the pricing, I always ask to try to understand their expectations, you know, what they expected around our price and how does that differ from it? And then try to uncover like where they got those previous expectations from. Mm. It could be from the competitors, but it also could be what they're doing today, which may not be applicable, or it could be a number that they made up in thin air, which was also not applicable. And so those are like the questions that we'd want to get to before we continue to go down the concession path.
I would love to get granular on some of the specific terms inside of this grid. So let's start with the most obvious one, which is just discount percentages, right? At a previous team, to not be named, reps were able to discount up to 20%. Okay. After that, anything further would require manager approval. And then there was a certain amount for VP approval. And we didn't want to slow deals down for a 10% discount. That was the thought behind it. But then there were more approvals for things like multi-year deals just because we were so early in our life cycle. So if we just start with the pricing, the discount piece, what types of breakpoints have you generally seen, whether at your current job or past jobs, for the rep, manager, VP level approvals or any other approvals?
One of the breakpoints that is really important to do, I think you can absolutely say 10% or 20% or 30%, whatever it may be, by actually like taking a look at what's the rep average before we put a framework in place and trying to increase or decrease their ability to discount a little bit just to see if there's a little stronger pricing integrity before they start bringing in a manager, where the manager is now at the average and we slowly get to a place where we're getting stronger and stronger on our price integrity and delivering more value in our sale.
I like that a lot. Do you see similar types of breakpoints on deal size for quarterly, monthly, whatever types of payments? Or is it more of a case-by-case basis for your team?
I can't say I have too much experience in that. We've done a pretty good job in all the companies I've been at to have pretty strong pricing integrity. But if I were to look at that, I'd probably take a look at where does it stop making sense for us to do this deal, on our cost of customer acquisition, our payback period, and then really make a business decision if we want to be hovering around there, if the logo is really attractive or it gets us to be a reference for a next set of customers that are interesting to us, but not typically something I've been around.
Ross, in the opening session, one of the things that you talked about when you were introducing this concept was the fact of what happens when you end up with bigger customers that are actually have worse price points than smaller customers. Like your reps got crazy for one quarter because you were close to your number and you needed to do a few things. And now you got people that are paying 10 grand that their unit cost is half of what your $1 million customers are paying. How does this situation prevent that? How does this help with that?
What I've seen work in the past is when you have different levers and discount approvals by those units. And so your SMB team can't discount as much as your mid-market team. Your mid-market team can't discount as much as your enterprise team. The challenge is, as you become more tenured as an account executive, you're able to sell on value a lot more frequently and more naturally than someone that's a little bit earlier in their career who may be a little more advantageous to discount faster in the sales cycle. And so I've seen it before where we've seen some enterprise customers pay more per unit than like a mid-market customer. And that's because the rep is really strong. They articulated the value, they created a business case for that enterprise customer. So the framework helps prevent that.
I've had a lot of people asking me, Mark, new business is so hard, acquisition is down, pipeline is down. And one of the things that I did at Catalyst, where we doubled revenue in a little over a year, was I empowered my reps and I was like, listen, he who makes the deal wins the deal. And so I was like, listen, I was saying yes to discounts. I would never have touched at Outreach. And in the current economic environment, how are you helping people deal with discounting? Because boy, our CFOs, I have one person say it, they're called CF no's right now. And so how are you getting them CF no's to CF yeses?
Well, I don't think price can always be the driver. There has to be the initiative before the price. But I do think you're going to see a lot of players that aren't like the number one in the space win a lot of deals. There's a clear reason why there is a number one. But if the number two can do 80% of the number one at 70% of the price, you're going to see a lot of those customers win. Mm-hmm. They're much more flexible. They're doing the majority of the software that you're purchasing it to accomplish. And so I'm starting to see it like just from my network of people that these number two players are winning a lot.
So do you think that if you're number one, you should discount more? Do you think if you're number two, you should continue the aggressive discounting? Like that's what I'm kind of after is like, you're in the market, you have a discounting question. Do you believe like right now is the time to discount more than normal? Or do you think now is a time to try to really hold on price?
This would be my take. I think it's important for you and the customer to agree that you are the best product to support them. If you can agree on that, then we shouldn't let the price get in the way of them choosing the best vendor for them within reason, right? If they're comparing us to the number two in the market, I get that. But if they're comparing our apples to their oranges, that doesn't make sense to me.
I totally agree with that, which is we're always the most expensive by sometimes like a puke worthy margin. And in the bull market, we could get away selling a deal at 45K when someone else would be selling it at sometimes 15 or 10. We'd literally be 3x the price. But it got to the point where obviously no HR leader could justify that type of thing. And so we might have to still settle at 20 or 25 and honestly drop our pants to win a deal. But the first question that needed to be answered was, are we vendor of choice? Are we the superior solution? Because if we're not, we're just setting up our CS team for a cheap churn bomb that's like massively unprofitable. Speaking of churn bombs, there's one other topic that I've seen a million different ugly structures on multi-year deals. I asked 10 people how they structure multi-year deals. Do they do ELAs, flat deals, all that stuff, price locks? And you get a million different answers. So I'm curious, what type of guidance do you give your reps on how to structure a multi-year deal? And do you maybe have one or two examples of what a good multi-year deal would look like versus a bad one?
Yes, I've done both. So why don't we first start with the bad? Let's talk about the market a couple of years ago. Everyone is investing in themselves. They're doubling headcount. They're doubling revenue. And in order for us to get to those next tiers of approvals that we talked about before, we can get to lower price points. And so we'd often have employers or companies commit to a higher headcount because that was in their trajectory in the near-term future. And so we saw a lot of these companies say, yeah, for sure, we're going to be there. The recs are open right now. And once you say yes to us, like you're committed to those number of users, but you know what happens when interest rates go up? We've flattened our orgs, we have higher manager ratios, we're doing more with less, and now we never reach those number of employees and we're not even close to them. And so that's an example of a challenging conversation that customer success is having today. They've purchased licenses that are not in use. And how are the companies, the software vendors of the world, going to right-size it? That's an example of the bad.
And so in that type of deal, essentially, let's put numbers to it. I might have been a rep who sold what's called an escalator deal. So a 50 to 75K deal. So it's 50K year one, 75K year two. And that year two price increase is based on the assumption that this customer is going to grow and probably a price per seat increase or something like that, just because things increase over time by a couple percentage points. And what happened with most teams is they didn't grow, they shrank, right? But I would argue that in a bull market, that would have been the right deal to sign. And so today, if you're not signing escalator deals for growth, are you signing flat deals? How do you grok a multi-year deal when someone's basically saying, yeah, this contract is pretty much going to stay the same for 2 years?
Yeah, here's my favorite, is price-based incentives on tiers where users decrease as headcount increases, but not retroactively. So let's imagine you're 1,000 users, and we say your first 1,000 users are going to be at $5, easy numbers. But your next 500 users are going to be at $4. The first 1,000 are still billed at $5, and only the next people are billed at $4. And so it helps just create the better economies of scale for the companies that are growing. And as they're decreasing, they know what those different tiers of employees are at when they're purchasing software. That's my favorite.
I love that one too. Do you do the thing where, okay, we know you're buying 1,000, if you go all the way back to 500, you're going to go up to $7. Have you done that part?
I haven't personally, no.
Yeah. I found that incentivizes people to help understand, all right, we're selling you a 1,000-person deal. A 500-person deal is substantially different. You can't just go backwards and still receive the discount that we gave you for the 1,000-person deal. So it's a way to have an insurance policy against the volume-based discount. And right now, like we all know, like that second year, if you oversell, you're going to take a contraction at the best and a churn at the worst. I think you can sometimes avoid some of the impact of a contraction by having that backstop of, you know, if you go below this, we're going to actually raise your price instead of just always looking forward right now.
Yeah, I think that structure makes a lot of sense because organically, if I'm thinking about it and you sign for 1,000 users, like that's your minimum. And what we've seen, organizations have downsized, they went from 1,000 to 800 employees. What are they doing with those 200 licenses? And so it helps them make it a little bit easier to swallow when, like, hey, now I'm only paying for 800 users, but I'm paying more than my $5 that I agreed to because I'm not having the commitment of 1,000 employees. I like that structure a lot.
To just clarify exactly how you guys are structuring this deal is, in Mark's world, let's say that I bought 1,000 seats at $5 per seat. If I decide to cut half my workforce and I drop to 500 seats, I might now charge, instead of $5 a seat, $7 or $8 a seat, for example. So my total contract is not getting cut in half. It's probably getting cut by 25%. But if I go up and I choose to add users, when you first sign this deal, Ross, it doesn't sound like there's a TCV or a total contract value, a multi-year contract value on the deal, because you actually don't know how many seats they're going to be at in the future years. But what you are doing is you're mapping out future price tiers for 1,250 seats, for 1,500 seats, for 2,000 seats. And it really just depends how much they grow next year. So you're kicking that can down the road. Is that correct?
Yeah. I've also seen the structure, like I just mentioned, where that 1,000 person minimum, whatever that price may be, that is your minimum contract value annually. And so when we put it into our metrics and for quota retirement for our reps, it's the 2 years, 3 years at that price. And we know that it can really only go up from there. Because if it goes down, they're still on the hook for the 1,000 users at that price.
So last topic on this one, and then we have to wrap. How do you compensate multi-year deals?
I love this. It was always a battle with finance. And it's a great conversation to have because you just want to make sure that your CFO also likes to have customer retention. And if they do, then let's incentivize reps to have multi-year deals. That's the best way to incentivize the behavior of a rep, is through monetary gain. I've seen a couple different structures. Curious on your guys' take. I've seen the first year is paid out like typical 1 year, however that may be, X percent. And then I've seen two different areas. I've seen one where the second year is then having like a kicker, which may be maybe half the 1 year value. Or I've seen a spiff-based model. But my preference would be the smaller percentage on the consequential years.
Yeah, I've always done the spiff-based model, an extra 5% or 3% or whatever it is for every out year after that. That way, people are incentivized to do 2, 3, 4 year deals. That's been the most common way I've done it. I tried it the other way a couple times, and it always felt like we got into disagreements about what was going on. For me, at least that was in my experience.
So for example, if I get paid 10% on year one, you might pay me an extra 3% or 4% for year two. That extra 4% is still based on year one ARR. So you're not arguing about, oh, let's project out how many employees this company is going to add. Is that right?
So I've tried it that way and gotten pushback from reps a lot. So what I end up doing is we estimate every year. So let's say we have 3 years, and 1 year's at 10, one's at 15, one's at 20. Then we take all 3 years. So together, 10 plus 15 plus 20 is $35,000. We divide that by three. And we take the 12 grand, we pay commissions on that. Then we pay the spiffed amount on top of that for however many years out it goes.
Gotcha. And that model wouldn't necessarily work with the future pricing grid model where you don't know where they're going to land. That would have to be in a, you've already determined that year two is 15, is going to be 150K, year three is going to be 200K.
Which I think we've also talked about probably isn't the right thing to do in this market, honestly.
Yeah. We would do it the same way, Mark. We'd average out the years of his 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and then use that spiff-based model.
Fascinating. Well, Ross, this was a blast of an interview. Not only did we get the best tactic of all time in speedy meetings. This is the first time we've ever gotten to talk through pricing, which is something near and dear to my heart. So we have to move to the final question. The final question is, Ross, we talked about a lot of good habits that sales leaders can exhibit. Now it's time to talk about a bad one. So what is one bad habit that every sales leader should break today to make every sales team a little bit better?
Definitely. I'm going to talk about co-selling. So co-selling is when the manager and the rep are working together on a deal. I see a lot of managers jumping in immediately in the deal because they are typically pretty good. They were promoted internally. They know what they're doing. I'd say stop it. Let the rep struggle a little bit. Let them learn from their mistakes. Obviously, if we're going overboard, save it. But you got to let the rep learn from their own challenges and let them experience the struggle so then you can then make that a learning moment for them.
Boom. Totally agree.
Let them fall. Let them get a scab. And everyone, hang on for a 60-second recap coming up soon.
Today's show is sponsored by Calendly. If you're interested in accelerating your sales cycle, improving your prospects' experience, and booking more demos, there's one scheduling automation platform on the market that does all three. Calendly offers team-based scheduling, solutions and integrations for every department, and lead routing to instantly book qualified meetings from your website and match known leads to reps based on real-time Salesforce assignment. I find it really helpful when I have to book meetings with multiple people on my side so that I don't have to coordinate everyone's calendars. Get started today by checking out the show notes or Calendly.com.
This actionable tactic on selling to power is sponsored by SalesLoft. Don't start from zero when a champion introduces you to power. Explain the 3 to 4 priorities you learn from the champion, but then ask them to validate what's really important to them or what we miss. And we partnered with SalesLoft to give you a whole bunch of talk tracks on selling to power. The link is in the show notes.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes. Did you know that 60% of proposals are viewed on a mobile device, which means if you're sending a text doc or a slide deck, the formatting is going to look really ugly and you're going to make a bad impression. Luckily, our friends at Quiller are here to help. Quiller pages are built on the web, which means they're mobile responsive and they actually look good on a cell phone. And Quiller is having an offer right now to upgrade your proposal from an ugly text doc to a Quiller page for free, so you can see what your boring proposal looks like as a beautiful Quiller page. There is a link in the show notes to take advantage of the offer.
Alrighty, Mark, it's time for a 2x2 recap. What do you got for your 2?
2x2, number one, make sure your Monday morning meetings are fun. We can read off a bunch of numbers and thank Billy for this and Jenny for that. And we run through 30 minutes of 18 slides and put everybody to sleep on Monday morning. Or you can dress up like Drake, throw down some bars, and have your backup singer management team, like, having your back and being your hype man. Like, that sounds like a Monday morning meeting to me. Let's go.
Boom. Let's go.
And then number two, I really like this one, is when you're doing your discounting approval matrix, the first place to look is what is your average discount right now in that area of the business, and then make the matrix just a little bit better. See if you can't get a little incremental revenue out of improving discounting by making sure that you're tuning your matrix and approvals to what the current average is. I thought that was a baller move.
Number three, another grid is the multi-year deal grid, where maybe 2 years ago, you could have signed a 50, 75, 100K escalator deal over 3 years. And now the problem is a lot of these customers aren't growing. And so what you might choose to do instead is you might say, hey, if you reach 1,250 seats or if you reach 1,500 seats, here's how you get economy of scale in future years, but we're not going to pre-agree on growth. And if you happen to shrink, here's how your price per seat will actually go up, so that we protect ourselves from the downside by protecting you on the upside. And then lastly, number four, speedy meetings. I have been the manager who has been 5 minutes late to every one-on-one. And eventually I got freaking tired of apologizing at the beginning of every single one-on-one. So I just started doing all of them at the 05 mark. And you would be amazed how much more calm you enter these meetings and how much more your team appreciates it when you have a second to go to the bathroom between your 4 back-to-back meetings. So folks, if you like this one, go connect with Ross on LinkedIn. Tell him you love this show and hang on for the next episode of 30 NPC Leadership Edition. Peace out.
Sponsored by Speed Meetings.
Gong's going to help you run the 5-minute drill at the end of all of your calls today. At the end of a call, pressure test the prospect with 3 questions. Number one, do you want to buy? If the answer is no, why set a next step at all? Number two, when do you want to buy? If it's tomorrow, we got to move fast. Number three, how do you buy? Based on the first 2 answers, I can now adequately decide if and how I set a next step. And this was stolen from the Gong 30 NPC 90-minute masterclass, and you can steal it too in the show notes.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes.